Hey folks, it's me, Ben Blacker, the creator and host of this podcast. I'm also the creator and host of a new live stage show, which I'm so excited to do. It's something I've wanted to do for quite some time. It's called Retrospects. And in Retrospects, we take spec scripts of existing shows, the samples that writers used to write to get into this business, when they were starting out. So samples of existing shows by pro writers, and we do professional reads of them with terrific actors that you know and love from television, film, and comedy, and animation, and all over. The first show is March 17th, and I am biting the bullet and doing the very first television script that I wrote when I was like 20 years old. I wrote an episode of Mad About You that kind of got me started in television. I got some feedback on it that got me excited and think I could do this. And so in that show, I will name who is to blame for getting me into television. We're also doing a actually legitimate great spec of Girls by Bridget Munoz-Leibovitz, who is a longtime friend of this podcast. She has written for Brooklyn Nine-Nine, One Day at a Time, Gordita Chronicles. She's a great writer, really funny. And her spec for Girls got her into the NBC writing program. We have assembled terrific casts for these reads, including Manny Jacinto from The Good Place, Diane Dion from Warrior and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Vella Lavelle from who you know from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and Animal Control, Raymond Lee, the star of Quantum Leap, Victoria Morales from Never Have I Ever. She is so good and so funny. I have wanted to do something with her since seeing the movie Plan B, which you should check out if you have not seen it. Who else? We've got Jessica Marie Garcia from On My Block, who's so good. Julia Duffy from Newhart. It's just a terrific cast to read these two scripts, which are very near and dear to both Bridget and to me. So we're excited to see them brought to life. We're going to keep doing this show somewhat monthly. We've already got next month's scripts lined up. These are at the Elysian Theater in Los Angeles. Go to elysiantheater.com and then look on their calendar for Sunday the 17th. It's an afternoon show, reasonable for grown-ups. We're doing it from 2 to 4 p.m. You can also live stream this show or watch it on demand. We're going to have it available for 1 week following the live show. You'll be able to watch it. After that, it's gone. I'm not podcasting this. I don't have any plans to do anything with these reads. We're just doing them for fun. I love working with actors. I love working with writers. And with this show, with Retrospects, I get to do both. So once again, go to elysiantheater.com, click on the calendar or click on the link for Retrospects. Get tickets. Please come live. Please come see the show. I would be thrilled to see you there. But also you can live stream it or watch on demand. And if that's all too much to remember, just go over to benblacker.substack.com. There's a link for the show in the most recent couple of posts. You can see it there, as well as pretty pictures of all the very pretty actors. Manny Jacinto from Good Place. I have the parts that he is playing are some of the funniest parts I've ever read, and I wrote one of them. So I'm pretty excited about that. All right. Once again, elysiantheater.com or benblacker.substack.com. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast, and please enjoy this episode.
They write, they talk, and talk about what they write. Tune in tonight, or whenever the time is right. It's the Writer's Panel with Ben Blacker, and it's starting now. Oh, yeah!
All right. This is how a podcast starts. John Orloff, thanks for being here. I'm going to have you introduce yourself on the microphone. Tell the folks where they've seen your name on their television and movie screens.
Well, hey there. I'm John Orloff. I'm a screenwriter. I guess most famously now, I wrote a show called Masters of the Air. And then I wrote another couple of episodes of a show called Band of Brothers. And then I've written a few movies, small budget movies generally, like A Mighty Heart for Plan B, some other ones.
Let's start with Masters of the Air. And like, it's been, you know, over 20 years since Band of Brothers. What brought you to this project? How did you get involved? And, you know, tell us like how this started to take shape.
Yeah, so I got a phone call about 10 years ago from Tom Hanks asking me if I wanted to work on another one. And I had not worked on The Pacific. I was writing a couple of features at the time. And so I couldn't participate in The Pacific, and which I kind of felt bad about, because Band was such a really incredible experience to be a part of. And so I wasn't going to say no when Tom called, and they'd already found the book Masters of the Air. They already knew that that's what they wanted to make a show off of. And so I read the book, and you know, I think my first impression was, well, if somebody will let us do something on this scale, I'm in. And so that was 10 years ago.
Oh, wow. So was the, I'm gonna sort of pick up on some of this stuff so we can dig in a little deeper before we move along chronologically. But like 10 years ago, you know, the TV landscape was not what it is now.
Totally different business.
Where in the development did you guys get? And then I imagine the scale must have really been intimidating at the time.
It wasn't intimidating for me. I really like big scale. A lot of my scripts are large tableaus, a lot of characters. So that was a feature, not a bug. And I knew that working with Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg on a World War II aerial combat show, if anybody would be allowed to think big on that kind of show, it would be Tom and Steven. So, you know, I knew we had a shot at making a really big, epic, giant thing. And so I kind of knew that pretty early on and wasn't intimidated at all. What was intimidating was the fact that the fabulous book by Don Miller is not about a particular man or even a particular group of men like Band of Brothers is. Band of Brothers is about Easy Company. The show is about Easy Company. Masters of the Air is about the entire 8th Air Force and the daylight bombing of Germany, and where the history comes from, where the bomber was designed, what a Norden bomb. I mean, it's just a giant piece of history. So my first year on the project, my first full year, was writing a 250-page Bible with 550 footnotes from 30 different sources. And the reason was, and Tom was even like, why did you do this when he finally got it? You know, and I was like, well, because I didn't know what the story was without doing the research. And since I'm doing the research, I might as well write it down so that when we go back to write the scripts, we'll know where that beat came from, what book it came from, what interview it came from, whatever. And having, you know, worked on Band and hearing stories on The Pacific, I thought I could prevent mistakes, you know, learn from how we made these shows in the past to make the third one go smoother. Of course, best laid plans never quite work out.
Well, what were those on the earlier, on Band at least? Like, what was the stuff that you could try to correct for? I'm sure you discovered all new mistakes to make, but.
Yeah, well, Band was really different because the guys were still alive. So you have a huge difference right there. So the first writer, the lead writer hired, was this guy, Eric Jenderson, who's a great writer. He wrote a Bible. It was a lot shorter. I think it was like 70 pages, 80 pages, maybe. And it was just sort of a structural thing. It wasn't what the episode would be. So for example, I did the D-Day. One of the ones I wrote was the D-Day episode. The Bible, Eric had everything that happened to 30 different people on D-Day. You know, not necessarily that the episode should only be following Dick Winters that day. And I think the other episode I wrote, episode 9, which is the concentration camp episode, I don't know, I think maybe he had a paragraph in there that was relevant to the episode I ended up writing, because it was almost a chronology of who was doing what when, right? And I kind of took a similar approach to that because Eric was a great leader in that regard and letting us, the writers, kind of create our own episodes. And we didn't break episodes on Band was not a TV show, and neither is Masters, by the way. They weren't run like, I mean, I don't mean that like to sound like an asshole. I mean, like, it wasn't run like a TV show. There was no writer's room. There was no showrunner. There was no real head writer. You know, Eric was the first writer in, and he was at one point going to write the whole show, but for time reasons, they couldn't do that. And then they suddenly needed more writers. And each episode was basically a mini movie, and we all reported to Tom. That was our boss, was Tom. So there was no, like I said, there was no writer's room. There was literally, we weren't even in the same city. None of us were in the same city. Somebody was in Paris. Somebody was in Carmel. Somebody was in LA. Somebody was in New York. You know, we all were doing our, so similarly, Masters was not a TV show. So after I wrote the Bible, Tom really liked it. Was a little overwhelmed by it, as I was. I mean, it's a really serious, crazy document. And, but I couldn't tell you what the episodes were unless I knew what historically these guys actually did in that time period. Like, okay, so what's Bucky Egan doing in August of 43? You know, if it's not in Don Miller's book, then what are we going to do? You know, and it wasn't in Don Miller's book. So that was the kind of stuff I had to find out. So, cause these shows really start from a place of truth. You know, these are not inspired by true stories or based on true stories. I mean, yes, they are technically, but we try to go, I think, a little further in finding drama in real events. Anyway, So I wrote the first episode for Tom and HBO. And when Tom read it, we both agreed it wasn't enough to sell HBO on this is Masters of the Air and this is why you need to make it. They'd read the Bible. They loved the Bible. But the Bible was almost a history book in itself, right? It also was like EJ. I did not necessarily say that episode this had to just be seen this way. So the first episode originally was what's now episodes 1 and 2. And we just didn't think that the show, you'd understand what we were trying to do until what's now the third episode, Regensburg, which is sort of the big giant battle. And that's when you really get a sense of, I think, what the show is about. And so Tom said, hey, can you write the first three of them? And we'll send in the first three together as a suite to HBO, right? And, you know, that was good. You know, there's like the left part of my brain is going, well, that's fantastic. I'm getting to write the first three of these things. At that point, it was only assumed I would write a couple. And a couple of other writers, kind of like on Band, would do it. The negative thing is, and I can now, you know, it wasn't a high-paying gig. You know, this is why we struck. You know, and so I wrote the first three, turned them into HBO. HBO loved it. Little problem was AT&T has decided to buy HBO. And HBO won't green light this project until the merger's complete. So, and the problem was the Trump administration didn't want the merger to happen. So there was the DOJ, I mean, it was like years of waiting for this. So Tom said, well, why don't you just write the whole show? And then we'll just, when the merger's over, we'll give them the budget, the scripts, and say, okay, we're going to go make our show now. And so I ended up writing the first 7 like that. In retrospect, it was a really bad decision on my part. No, I'm serious. Like, I'm the only one who's got skin in the game at that point, right? Like, I've now worked by that point. So the first 7 scripts and Bible took me 4 years. Each one of these scripts was originally 80 pages, 90 pages. And think about it. You're writing, or I was writing, a World War II movie, 9 of them, for Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg. They kind of have to be good. You know, so I worked really fucking hard on them. And then after I made them, I finally, after writing 7 of them, and they still wanted me to keep on writing for guild minimum, which is why we had a nice strike, I finally said, you know, no, you guys decide whether you want to make this show or not. And then I'll finish writing it. And so, yes, they obviously, HBO decided not to make it, or AT&T really decided not to make it. They had a very different, as we now look in that rearview mirror, AT&T had a very different business plan for Warner Brothers, HBO. And then thankfully, the good people at Apple sort of said, HBO's loss is our gain. You know, do you want to make it over here?
You know, in talking about writing those first 7 episodes, and you know, knowing they had to be great, it seems like a good opportunity to talk about your process. And you know, you are not writing towards production at this point. You're writing in the hopes to sell this thing at some point in the future. So
you make a really interesting point that I did not understand, because I had, because you're right, you scripts are different, and scripts, often scripts are a sales tool, and often scripts are a document to be shot to make a movie. And they are not necessarily, those two documents are not necessarily the same. And this was interesting, because when I originally wrote this show, it was for an audience of one. It was Tom Hanks, and he was the boss. He was the ultimate decider. I know Tom's tastes. We talked about the show endlessly before I was writing it. I knew what he liked about World War II, and that's who I wrote for. That was not the same as writing for HBO or Apple and trying to get a green light from either of those entities. And I did not write my scripts for that purpose. And that made it a little more challenging, actually. They weren't easy reads.
In what way?
They're not selling you an idea. You know, they're not like short little sentences, and just even in the description. It's I wrote a map to shoot Tom Hanks's World War II aerial combat show. And that is an incredibly specific writing audience. And I'm not trying to sell Tom on what's so cool about a B-17, or why is it beautiful, or I don't have to do any of that. You know, I don't have to explain that in the body of the script. So it's a different process. So I wrote these scripts for Tom, and yeah, I interrupted you in your question. Sorry.
No, I'd like to dig in on that process a little bit more. I think that finding that difference between, you know, script as selling tool and script as production tool is one thing for sure. And I think you've touched on that, but you're also not up against a deadline necessarily.
Quite the opposite.
So what do your writing days look like?
Oh, they were hell. You know, well, also because these shows, at least I take them maybe a little too seriously in terms of getting it right, whatever that means, right? For me, it means getting the history right and making it dramatically, you know, really engaging, right? And that is a really time-consuming process, actually. Without like denigrating other things, because I know, you know, a lot of movies try to do this, and some don't, even if they're saying inspired by, you know, or based by. But because the ethos that started with Band of Brothers, and we knew these guys, I mean, Dick Winters was a friend of mine. I was invited to his funeral, you know, I mean, Lipton and Malarkey. I mean, I knew these guys, and it was I mean, it was a really, I mean, sacred oaths is too big of a phrase, but we, the writers and everybody who worked on Band, just felt this incredible onus on getting it right for these men. And I took that with me on Masters, you know, even though on Band, you know, you literally had Dick Winters watching the episodes and telling you what he thought, which is way more fucking intense than any studio head doing the same thing. And here on Masters, we didn't, you know, I couldn't call them up. I couldn't, there was no trapeze net, you know. So my day was, on this project, was really filled with a lot of research and double backing and double checking and research, you know, finding the signposts in the real story that I can fill in between with drama that takes me from the signpost to the signpost. It doesn't really deviate too far from the road of truth, you know?
You know, you have this enormous document that sort of is an overview of the world of the story we're telling. And I feel like, you know, those first couple episodes, you have a pretty good idea of where to start a story like this. You know how to get people on board by that second episode. Finding your way in the middle, I imagine, must have proven difficult.
It didn't in this show. I mean, once I figured out the basic structure and the character relationships, it folded pretty or unfolded pretty easily from my first kind of take on the show till what we ended up making structurally. And, you know, I know a lot of people say this about the things they're making right now. You know, it's one big movie. This, you know, I would argue this is one big 9-hour movie that's pretty structurally, one act is the first four episodes. Act two is five, six, seven. And then our third act is 8 and 9. And I'm really into structure. So for me, there were no second act doldrums in this because I actually really like episodes 5, 6, and 7. And I knew that that's what those episodes would be roughly years and years and years ago. So I didn't have a problem with that. No.
And then, you know, you're digging in, you're researching, you're going back over presumably all the stuff that you put into that initial document too. What does the actual writing look like for you? Do you research concurrently? How many, like, what are you getting down in a day?
Yeah, I mean, it is both. You know, I never stop researching. I would never stop, you know, calling people up. And also because just this particular subject matter is huge, as we were talking about. The scale of the show is huge. So an airbase is huge, and what are the processes on an airbase, and how do people talk to each other, and you know, all of that has to be in every scene in the background, and the drama is sort of is woven in that tableau. But I always kind of start from that tableau, like, where is this scene happening? What's the reality in the world that my characters are inhabiting right now? And then I can figure out how they're working in that reality. So there was always something to research every single day. And maybe I used it as a crutch to avoid, you know, the hard questions some days. And, you know, it's in the script. I mean, I'm very, very proud of my action writing from even Band of Brothers. You know, every shot in episode two, which is a wall-to-wall action episode, it's the D-Day episode, and that whole sequence in Braecar Manor, when they take out the guns, every shot is in my script. You know, that every beat has been structured. Same thing with the battles in Masters. Every time you see a plane go down, well, that's because it goes down in the script on that page. And not only that, I know what plane it is. I know in real history how that plane went down, and we're going to do it that way. So when you see plane third from the left behind Buck Clevin's airplane going down because his engine number three is on fire. Well, I bet you what, that's what really happened, that the third plane from his right had its engine fire on engine number three and down that plane went. So that's an extreme example, right? But anytime I'm starting to think, okay, now this is the scene where Crosby is doing this in, you know, whatever location, well, what the fuck is that location like? What's going on back there? And because also these shows are slightly about procedure, you know, they are procedure heavy shows, you know, Tom is really into revealing character through procedure. And so, you know, maybe it has an outsized importance in these shows. So, you know, it's a constantly like weaving, going back and forth, back and forth. And it never stopped. I mean, even when we were shooting, I was in England for the whole shoot and we were just constantly rewriting and finding out new things, or, you know, a director wanted to explore a couple characters a little bit more than they were in the original script. And so now I got to figure out what their reality was, you know, because again, we want to try to stay as close to the truth as we could. And I think, you know, that's what makes these shows kind of special, you know, and particularly in Masters of the Air, you know, there's so many things that happen in the show that you just can't believe are real, you know, and they are, you know, it really happened. And it's finding those things.
You mentioned working with the directors, because there wasn't a writer's room, like these are your next closest creative collaborators on the show. I'm curious to hear about what that collaboration is like. You know, you're building this thing so specifically. What's the director's job on these shows?
Well, these were feature directors who are used to making movies, and that's how they did their episodes, you know, and they all worked differently. And so I worked differently with each director, you know, but I've been doing that for years as a feature writer. I mean, I'm other than Masters and Band, I've written one pilot that never got made. All my other writing is features. So, and tends to be with directors, either already attached or they get attached really early on. I really like collaborating with directors. So I've been really fortunate in working with like Michael Mann and Gus Van Sant and Zack Snyder. And yeah, it just, you know, goes on, like really, really great filmmakers. And here, you know, we have these feature directors and, you know, they're all doing their own thing.
But you're there the whole time. You know, you're...
But not on set. So I wrote those seven episodes and then Apple came on board and, you know, very rightly, I mean, those 80 page scripts that I had, those first drafts that were, you know, first drafts plus a couple polishes, but still basically first drafts. Nobody was going to make 89 page episodes, you know, so everybody knew there was going to be work needed on the show before we went to production. So I did that for another year, working on the scripts for the studio. And then we started shooting and we kept on pushing back writing episodes 8, 9, and 10. So I kept on rewriting episodes 1 through 7, first for the studio, then for directors. And so then it's time to start shooting episode 1 and fuck, we still don't have an episode 7, but we've just hired Anne and Ryan and they have notes on episode 5. So John, can you start working on the notes for episode 5 while you keep on thinking about what you're going to write in episode 7 or 8, you know? So it was a bit mad. It was the hardest show that anybody I know who worked on it, they would all say the same thing. It was COVID. No regrets, of course not, but it was really hard. It was really hard. The scale was just really big. I mean, our normal day was around 1,200 people in the middle of COVID. They all have to be tested 5 days a week. and make a movie. You know, it was just really hard.
So what do you take with you to the next project that you learned from such an enormous undertaking?
Don't do that again. No, I mean,
is that true? Like, given the opportunity to tell another story like this?
No, I really love big, giant. Yeah. How often do you get these kind of opportunities? No, of course not. What have I taken? I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I'm still sort of processing the project. I mean, we were still editing the show in November. And I started working on it in 2014. And you know, even like you had said a little bit earlier in the development process, it was kind of stupid to write the first seven, you know, because there was a really good chance that if HBO had said no, there was no Apple, I would have really wasted 5 years of my life. So I'll never do that again. That I learned. That I definitely learned. But the scale of it was what attracted it to me, and the scale of it was what was difficult about it. You know, I mean, day after day, you just heard really, really people who've been working forever just saying, I've never seen anything like this. You know, just going on a set and you just like, what is this thing? I mean, our set for the base was just, it was acres of like a real world. It was like going into a time warp because it was all practical lighting. So, and the Quonset huts would be married as that location for the whole show. They wouldn't be redressed. So it wasn't like we had three Quonset huts and one day it's a hospital, the next day it's a meeting room, the third day it's an interrogation. No, we built the hospital. It was the hospital for 10 months. You could walk into the hospital anytime you wanted. And it was a hospital complete with penicillin jars. And then you'd walk across the grass and you'd be in the officers' club. And again, all practical lighting. So it didn't feel like you were on a set for acres of this. It was insane.
Is this a once in a lifetime opportunity?
I don't know. I don't know. It might be a beat before something like this gets made again. You know, it was, I think you just have to have that moment of talent like Tom and Steven and willingness of Apple. But it was really hard, you know, it was really hard.
So as you look forward to, you know, the future of making things in film or TV, are you chasing something either in response to this or what you've done in the past or, you know, is it more of this?
I don't know. You know, I'm still kind of coming up for air after this because, you know, certainly after I did Band of Brothers, and I only worked on Band of Brothers for 2 years. I only wrote two episodes of it. And you think, well, that's even weird, like 2 years working on 2 hours of television. But again, it was, you know, everything was like a movie. I swear I would never do another World War II thing. And it kind of was one of the reasons why I didn't rush into the Pacific was like, you know what? I have done World War II. And so like right now I think, well, maybe I won't do World War II for a while, you know, but then, you know, I'm talking to somebody, an idea comes up, I just get sucked back in, you know, you don't know. Or, you know, maybe I should do a small little 4-character piece instead of, I think in Band we have over 300 speaking roles. And like 280 of them are real people and I know their names, you know, and probably what town they came from. And, you know, so I don't think I would do that again, you know, at least not tomorrow.
What's the draw for you about these World War II stories?
Well, I think, you know, I grew up, you know, I was a kid. World War II movies were like all over, you know, Guns of Navarone, Patton. Those were a little before my time, but I would see them on TV in reruns in the 70s, you know. And I really love those films. I was a latchkey kid, parents divorced. So Hogan's Heroes was on television, you know, 4 times a day, it felt like. McHale's Navy. And then, I mean, Band of Brothers happened by happenstance for me. I was in a general meeting with Tom and I begged to be hired. And it was the first job I ever got hired on. as a screenwriter. And
that was based off of something they had, like you had that meeting because they had read something. Yeah.
It's a spec. Yeah. I had a spec, about William Shakespeare. It's a 16th century Elizabethan melodrama. Tom's company read it. They didn't want to make it, but they liked my writing. And they had me come in to just talk about a different project that also never got made. Although my Shakespeare script did. And then in those meetings, I was kind of like, hey, have you hired? I'm really into World War II. Also, I was really into history as a kid, like really into history. I'm still really into history. So that had a lot to do with it. So then when you start to talk about history and you're already kind of into World War II and Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg ask you to make a World War II thing, you know, it's, if you're kind of remotely interested, it's like the greatest job you're ever going to get, you know? And, but at the same time, I mean, it's an endlessly fascinating time period because the stakes are so clear. I mean, even if you decide to examine World War II and look at the morals less than clear, you can also do that. You know, you can make a movie that's really rock solid where the morals are really, really clear, or you can make a movie where it's a little less clear, the moral decision making that's going on, and the stakes can be, I just find it endlessly fascinating. You know, it's also a time, it's hard to describe, every single person on the planet was actively engaged in the war. Even if you were living in Kansas, you know, maybe you're a mother, but you're still rationing gasoline, and you can't have meat four times a month, and you know, your whole, and what you shop, what you buy, you're giving up things, your son is overseas. I mean, everybody was involved in the war. And so you have a whole group stage that's really, really interesting to me as well, you know? I just find it endlessly fascinating.
I'm always curious to hear from writers, you know, who've been at this for a while. Is there one that got away for you? Is there a project that you were like, this was the dream and it just hasn't happened yet?
Well, yeah. I mean, something I wrote or an assignment that like I was up for and didn't get.
You tell me. Which hits hardest?
Or the things I turned down, the stupid things I've turned down.
Oh, what are the stupid things you've turned down?
Oh, that's a long list of hubris. Some MCU stuff back in the early days. The one that got away. Well, you know, there's a couple of scripts that I've written that I really, really love, but I don't own. So I wrote a script for actually Tom and Michael Mann about the rise to power of Julius Caesar before the HBO show Rome came out. I really love that script. I adapted a Terry Pratchett book that I really love for DreamWorks Animation that didn't get made. You know, I once it got away, yeah, that's harder. You know, sometimes like I remember I was on a list of reading. I can't remember who had written it. Hugo, the Scorsese film, and they wanted to polish or something. And I read the script and it's like, I wouldn't change anything. I didn't get that job. Somebody polished it. It wasn't me. And I really liked that movie. So I don't know. I guess that got away. Yeah, you know, for me, if I can't, I have, and this went for my MCU, really very brief experiences. You know, if I don't think I can hit a home run, then I'm not going to do it. Very quick story. So my Shakespeare script. So, you know, I wrote this spec about the Shakespeare authorship question in like 98. The same year that Shakespeare in Love comes out. So nobody wants to touch my fucking script, right? Because it's like, no, we've already done the behind the scenes of Shakespeare. So, okay, so the script kind of just doesn't exist for a while. And I can't remember when, like 2004, I get a phone call from my agent saying, Roland Emmerich wants to meet with you, you know, the master of disaster. I'm like, what? Okay. So I go to Roland's office and it's just me and Roland. And yeah, he starts, you know, he starts talking with his accent and he starts doing the German accent and he's telling me about this new movie he's looking for a writer for. Yeah, it's fair, the weather, you know, the weather gets very bad. And then there's a boat going down Fifth Avenue because there's ice on the Fifth Avenue and this giant boat is going down. He's pitching me the day after tomorrow. But the more he's pitching it, the more I'm going, oh, dude, you do not want to hire me for that. Right? Like, because I am not going to hit a home run on that. And I said that to him. I was like, you know what? I don't think I'm the right guy for this project. And he instantly goes, yeah, really? Why not? I was like, I just don't think that's like my strong thing. He's like, well, yeah. What else have you written? And I pitch him my 16th century Elizabethan melodrama, because wouldn't you pitch Roland Emmerich your 16th century Elizabethan melodrama? And he ended up, you know, buying it 2 weeks later. It was a spec script and he bought it. And you know, we ended up developing it for a couple of years, but before we made it. But yeah. So I'm very careful about like what I choose to work on. If it's an assignment, you know, if it's not an original idea, which I would say 80% of my work is non-original ideas. I tend to, I learned really quickly 25 years ago when I started writing, I had a writer's group, a really, really tight writer's group. We met once a week religiously for 10 years. We all were starting out at the same time. And, you know, I learned really, really quickly the jobs you say, a couple of things, the jobs you say yes to are really important, because if you decide that it's a stupid job, but it's worth a lot of money and you're going to take that stupid job and write a stupid script, your problem is you now have a stupid script out there with your name on it and everybody thinks it's stupid because of you, right? So I saw a couple of my friends do that. So I didn't do that. And then the other thing was, you know, the assignment business doesn't really exist like it used to. But when it did, what was great about it as a working writer was going after an assignment that they've already committed to an idea, right? Now it's just you selling you as the writer. So now you're only doing half the job, right? They've already fallen in love with the material. Now you've got to convince them that you're in love with the material and that you're the best writer to write it. So, you know, that was basically what I was doing for much of my career.
All right. John, thank you for talking today. Masters of the Air is on Apple TV. Folks can watch the entire series right now. We'll end as we always do by asking you what you are watching on television these days. What's getting you excited or inspired?
Well, I don't want to sound like an Apple TV Plus fanboy, but in fact, I am. This Peter Capaldi show, Criminal Records, is really, really, really good filmmaking. He is amazing. The whole cast is amazing. There's a guy or two from Masters are in it. Ken Loach's son directs the first half of it. Just really, really good filmmaking. So I've really enjoyed that.
You had mentioned that you are a fan of these British procedurals. What are some of the others that you love?
Well, you got to start with Prime Suspect. I mean, it always goes back to Prime Suspect in the 80s and 90s. And Broadchurch. I mean, I'm a sucker for them all. Shetland, the Scottish one. I don't know. My wife and I just eat them up. Oh, my God. I can't remember now. I'm blanking on one of them. They all have Happy Valley. That's it. Happy Valley. Happy Valley is so damn good. If you haven't seen Happy Valley, you gotta see Happy Valley. And they're just out of my world. Like, I don't write that, right? So for me, it's really entertaining because I'm not like going, oh, well, that's a stupid choice as a writer or as a producer. You know, if I'm watching a historical drama, don't take me to see a historical drama. I have not seen Napoleon yet. Not going to. My son tells me not to, because I'm just not going to be a happy audience member.
That's fair. John, thanks so much for chatting today.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.